entirely honest. Something about this Christmas season, for me, it just seemed a little bit off. I'm not quite sure if it's the fact that my kids are older and some of that magic, that mystique of Christmas is gone, or the fact that once again there was no snow for Christmas, or maybe it was that I worked too much and I didn't get to spend enough time binge watching my favorite holiday movies. Whatever the reason, there was just something about the season that just wasn't quite right for me. Have any of you ever experienced a Christmas time like that? I see some heads nodding out there. And it wasn't just me, because even my daughter Maggie, who is traditionally a Christmas fanatic, she didn't even really feel the Christmas spirit. And frankly, I don't know why. But you know what's funny? You know what really, really bothered me this year? My Christmas tree. And I know that sounds absolutely nuts, but in our family, at least recently, we've had this tradition that on the weekend after Thanksgiving, we go out and we get a live tree and we bring it home. And the event of decorating the Christmas tree is really, it's just that. It's an event for us. And so we're not like the Griswold family. We don't go trekking into the knee-deep snow of the forest trying to find the most outrageous conifer that's out there. As a matter of fact, we go to Home Depot and choose from their selection. But this year, when we were there, we really found what for us looked like the perfect tree. It looked like the ultimate tree. It was the right height. It was the perfect form. It was full-bodied. The needles were nice and soft. And you know what? It smelled like Christmas. You know what I mean, don't you? Where you sniff that evergreen and you just, it's that holiday smell. This was the tree. We took it home. We set it up. I bought extra lights. I watched a YouTube video on how to appropriately light a Christmas tree. And I spent a ridiculous amount of time wiring about 800 LED lights around the branches of that tree. And after we were done, everybody decorated. And as we sat back and looked at this tree, man, we had really outdone ourselves. It was awesome. But over the next couple of weeks, our tree began to change a little bit. I came in one morning, I looked at the tree, and the branches were a little saggy. And the needles weren't quite as full or quite as soft. And all of this in spite of the fact that my very dutiful wife was watering this thing once, if not twice a day, to keep this very thirsty conifer alive. And things got worse after our holiday Christmas party we have for the surgery department, because for about five hours, these Christmas lights were on the tree. And the next day, holy cow, that poor thing looked like it had weathered the longest drought in the history of man. It was pathetic. There were ornaments literally touching the ground. The boughs of the tree were so, so saggy. And so my wife, in her infinite wisdom, made the decision that if we were going to nurse this tree through our holidays, which for us, actually, this is our last holiday celebration today, but if we were actually going to get this tree through the entirety of our holidays, we were going to have to stop turning the lights on. Because clearly that was a problem for this poor little tree. And I know this may sound a little whiny, a little petty, but I got to tell you that after all that time that I spent wiring that tree, staring at an unlit Christmas tree was very unfulfilling for me. And so this whole thing really served to stifle my Christmas spirit. Now, we did make the agreement that when people came over to celebrate the holidays, that we would turn it on for a brief period of time, and then after the celebration was over, we turned it right back off. And so that happened for us on Christmas Day. We turned it on, opened the presents, lights go back on. And after everybody had retired to their own private spaces, as you know, teenagers do when they get their gifts, they're just scattered to the four winds and doing their own thing. I sat there on my couch and I looked forlornly at my unlit tree. And it was in that moment that I was absolutely ashamed of myself. Because here I had let this stupid Christmas tree dictate how I felt about Christmas. And really, what the heck does a Christmas tree have to do with the story of the birth of Jesus anyway? I mean, it's not in the nativity story anywhere. So why is this Christmas tree so important? Why is it such a holiday staple? Well, that's a pretty good question. I didn't have the answer. So I did what every good American does. I reached over and I grabbed my iPad and I went to the ultimate source of wisdom, not named the Holy Bible, the internet. And after about an hour, my aging and weary brain had been expanded by the knowledge that I learned. And rather than bore you with the inordinate details, let me tell you that there is no defined, specific event which made the Christmas tree such a holiday symbol. But there are many events that kind of led to it. So let me summarize those for you. The tradition of bringing freshly cut palm leaves and adorning the houses began in the very, very early times in the Egyptian people. And then this continued through century after century people. And the Druids in the 14th century adapted this, and they took boughs of evergreen, and they would adorn their pagan temples with it. And the source or the symbol of this evergreen bough was to symbolize everlasting life. And it was in the 16th century that very devout German Christians actually began to either bring in potted trees or cut down trees and bring them into their house and decorate them as a celebration of the birth of Jesus. As a matter of fact, it is widely believed that Martin Luther himself is the one who is responsible for lighting the first Christmas tree. The story goes that he was traveling home one night after having written a sermon, and he was absolutely awestruck by the appearance of the brilliance of the stars twinkling amongst the evergreen trees. And so to try and recreate this vision that he had had for his family, he went home and he wired candles to their Christmas tree that they had in their house. I don't recommend trying that, by the way. Nevertheless, this tradition took hold, and then it began to grow and grow and spread to North America. And as I read each of these historical discussions about the origins of this practice, there was one overarching theme that I continued to read about. And that is the purpose of these evergreen branches was to bring life and light into the darkness of winter. And so then it really dawned on me, this is exactly the answer that I was looking for. This is why we have Christmas trees to celebrate the birth of Jesus, because that is exactly what the birth of Jesus did, was to bring life and light into the darkness of the world. And as I thought about this, it made me think about a nativity story that we don't think about or hear about very often. All of us, of course, are familiar with the early gospel nativity stories about Mary and Joseph taking a voyage to Bethlehem and not being able to find a home, so they give birth to this baby Jesus in, for all intents and purposes, a modern-day parking garage. That's the nativity story, what we think of. But there's one more gospel that tells a little different story about the birth of Jesus, and that's the Gospel of John. And I want you to listen to what John says. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God, and God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. And that light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. So here I had my answer. This symbolism of the Christmas tree was really representative of the light of the world that came to us at Christmas. And so that's what I want to cover with you this morning. Now, when we consider this interplay between light and darkness, you really don't need to look any further than your favorite novel or your favorite blockbuster movie or even the evening news to encounter this idea of darkness. As a matter of fact, it's something that is pervasive in our own lives almost on a daily basis. And when you think about it, the Bible from beginning to end is a continuing saga of bringing light into darkness. From the very beginning of Genesis to the very end of Revelation, there is an ongoing battle between good and evil, light and dark. At the beginning of time, God peered into the darkness of the void. And into that chaos, he shouted, "Let there be light." And there was light. And it was very good. And when we read about this, this really isn't intended to conjure up an image of God unleashing the powers of creation or the Big Bang or the creation of our source of light, the sun. But more importantly, it speaks loudly to the fact that God is always there, peering into the darkness and the chaos of our lives and shouting, "Let there be light." And from Genesis through the remainder of the scripture, this abides as a constant theme about God pouring his light into the darkness. So let's talk about the darkness for just a little bit. If you read through the scriptures, there are really two primary uses of this word, darkness. The first is the evil deeds that we do to one another. And the second is the pain and the despair and the suffering that each of us encounter at some point in our lives. So let's start with this first term. Let's look at a few examples of this darkness that is associated with evil. An anonymous author of the Proverbs describes this particular darkness this way. He says, "The way of the wicked is like deep darkness." So here we see already this likening between this term of evil or wickedness with darkness. In 1 John, he states that whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness, and he does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. And we're all too familiar with this type of darkness, aren't we? This evil that people do to one another. On a small scale, we wrestle with this every day of our lives. Something as simple as making a decision whether we're going to make that snide comment to a person who has really irritated us. It may seem petty, but that too is a form of darkness. Or maybe it's when you choose to put your own needs before those of others. Some people have deeper issues with the darkness. Alcohol addiction, drug addiction, pornography, these all serve to separate us from the light. Because that's truly what darkness is. It's an absence of light. And sadly, in this world, there abounds a darkness that is even more unthinkable. In this country alone, in this past year, we averaged almost one mass killing for every single day of the year. Imagine that. Over 340 mass killings in this country in the past year. I mean, it happens so often that as the news blares it at you, it's just like Woodstock squawking in your ear. You're numb to it. You just don't even think about it. And it happens all the time. How awful is that, that it has become so unimportant to us that it's just another event? And you really need think no further than two of the ones that seem to stand out the most from this past year. Of course, the massacre at Parkland, where 17 students and staff lost their lives when a disgruntled former student walked in and gunned them down. Or more recently, in October, when 11 worshipers in a Pennsylvania synagogue were the victims of anti-Semitic hate. And these victims, both young and old, serve as a constant reminder that, unfortunately, we live in a world that is filled with hate and evil. We live in a world that is filled with darkness. And as difficult as that is to conceive of, it is the truth of the matter. Well, let's take a look at this other form of darkness. And that is that feeling of despair and sadness, hopelessness and loss. This too, of course, is something that we are all familiar with in our lives. And this is also something that was pervasive through the scriptures, particularly in the Old Testament scriptures. The Israelites, the Jewish people, they knew pain and suffering and hopelessness. From approximately 722 BC, the kingdoms of Israel and Judah were constantly, it seemed, overrun by their enemies. From the Assyrians to the Babylonians to the Greeks to the Romans, these merciless conquerors killed or enslaved the entire nation of Israel over and over, taking the people away, putting them in different parts of the world, and making every possible attempt to eradicate this people from history. These people knew darkness. Matter of fact, many of the lamentations from the book of Psalms come from that period of enslavement in Babylon. And it's this darkness that we can all relate to. Think about Job, that icon of biblical suffering. Listen to what he said in regards to the darkness. He said, "My face is red with weeping, and on my eyelids there is a deep darkness." If I look out among this congregation, I am quite certain that many of you know what it is like to have deep darkness on your eyelids. It's an unfortunate byproduct of this world that we live in. But the one truth that remains constant, both then and now, is that in the midst of our struggle and the chaos of our lives, God continues to shout into that darkness, "Let there be light." This is the hope that the Jewish people clung fervently to with their century after century after century of enslavement. This promise that God would not abandon them, that God's light would redeem them, that there would be hope in their midst of hopelessness. The psalmist said, "For it is you who light my lamp, the Lord. My God lightens my darkness." The prophet Micah bravely declared, "Do not gloat over me, mine enemies. Though I have fallen, I will rise. Though I sit in darkness, the Lord will be my light." And this is the kind of faith that saw them through their darkness. And this is the same assurance that we have, that no matter the trials that we're walking to, the desperation or the hopelessness that we feel, even when we are walking through the valley of the shadow of death, which literally translates into the valley of darkness, even then, that God will not abandon us, that he continues to shout into the darkness, "Let there be light." Now, about 700 years after the prophet Micah spoke of the coming of the light, this Messiah who would save the world, God stopped speaking light into the world. And instead, he took on human form and he stepped into the darkness and he became the light. This miraculous arrival of Jesus that we celebrate at Christmas is the flesh and blood incarnation of the incomparable and unimaginable light of God. And whether they would accept it or not, he was exactly what the Jewish people had been hoping in and trusting in and praying for. And although he didn't come as a conquering king to vanquish their foes, and instead came as an illegitimate child of teenage parents from Nowheresville, Nazareth, it does not lessen the impact of the fact that that baby was and is the light. Now, in truth, we don't really know for sure that Christmas Day is the day that Jesus was born. As a matter of fact, it probably wasn't. But we have chosen this day to celebrate his birth because it represents the winter solstice. This is the longest day of the year, where nighttime is at its greatest. Over the past several months, the fall and the winter have culminated in these long, dark days that are filled with darkness, and they affect moods. Many people struggle with the darkness. And the winter solstice is that period of time where you know that from that day forward, light begins to creep back into the world. That there is this hope of life and light on the horizon. And so once again, we see this symbolic figure that light is overcoming the darkness. And so this is why we celebrate Christmas on the 25th. And as Jesus went through his ministry, make no mistake that he knew exactly who he was and what his purpose on earth was. As he spoke to his disciples in John, he said to them, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness and will have the light of life." And this is really the true story of Christmas, isn't it? That God is light, and that light came into our world in the form of Jesus so that he could expel the darkness that surrounds us and bring us light and hope. That no matter where you are or what you've done in your life or what your station, that as long as you accept him and accept the light, that you can never be overcome. That his love redeems and saves everyone that accepts it. And really, that above all is more than enough reason to celebrate Christmas, isn't it? That promise of life and light. But the story doesn't end on Christmas, does it? When the decorations are taken down and that old dying Christmas tree has been tossed into the back pasture, the story is not yet over. Because you see, first God spoke into the light, or spoke into the darkness. And then he stepped into the darkness as the light. And now he expects each of us to shine that light into the dark corners of the world. This is what he has called on us to do. We now must become the light. In the Sermon on the Mount, which we've been studying over the past several weeks, we read that we are the light of the world. Jesus tells not only his disciples, but everyone who hears the words that he speaks, we, as his followers, are the light of the world. And that light of the world is not meant to be hidden. It's not meant to be hoarded away and kept for our own warmth. It is meant to illuminate the darkness so that the people around us who are stumbling around without light might see it. This is our responsibility. We must shout into the darkness, "Let there be light." The story didn't end at Christmas. And in case you're just not sure what it looks like to be the light to someone else, I want to share a video with you. This is a video many of you may remember. It aired on the local TV stations about 4 years ago. But I think it's a really good reminder of just what it looks like to share the light. This is a story about a Secret Santa in Kansas City. Take a look. Thank you. That isn't it. It has expanded in the Kansas City area and has served as an inspiration for similar projects that now are found throughout America. And this is just a small example of what it looks like to be the light for someone else. You don't have to go out and give your money. You can give your time, a kind word. It doesn't have to be something as big as what this person has done. And you heard him say himself, why did you want them to get out of this? I wanted them to get the joy of serving others. And isn't that what it's really all about? When the Secret Santa was interviewed just a few years later, he said that the purpose of this entire project was to be an example of God's love to a world that seems to have forgotten what exactly that looks like. I think he's done a pretty good job. And interestingly, he said the inspiration for his idea came from this group of Persian scholars who risked everything on a dangerous trek across the desert to find a boy they didn't even know for sure would be there, a boy who would save the world. And who could have known that the selfless gifts that those magi gave that baby would serve as the funding for their penniless family to escape the murderous rampage of Herod? Who could have known? Sometimes just the simplest, selfless gift can have such a tremendous impact on somebody else. This is what it looks like to be the light. So as I sit back and reflect upon my past Christmas season, my disappointing Christmas season, I now realize that it wasn't the tree that needed water or more lights. It was me. Perhaps you can understand how that feels yourself. Because even today, even in this very moment, God continues to peer into the darkness and the chaos of our lives and shout, "Let there be light." Can you hear him? And if you do, what are you doing to let your light shine so that the people who are stumbling around in the darkness and can't hear him might see that beacon of hope that is meant for all of us? Let there be light, because it isn't just good. It's really pretty amazing. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, having celebrated this Christmas season, we are so thankful for so many gifts that you give us. Not just the fact that you spoke life and light into a world, the world that we live in and we call home, but that you continue to speak continuously into that darkness. That you allow us to know that you are always there and that your life, your light can never be extinguished. But even the darkness of crucifixion was not enough to overcome your light, because nothing can extinguish the light that you have. And that light is meant for all of us. And it's not just meant for us. It's meant for us to give to others. And so my prayer this morning, Lord, is that you would please fill us with your Spirit and help us so that we too can be like you, that we can reflect this light to others, because Lord knows there is a world full of darkness out there that needs some light. Thank you for your Son and for your love and for all that you do, Lord. Amen.